back.
You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington. And joining me this evening is the one and only Mr. Kevin Durso. How are you, bud?
Much better than I was after trying to do post-game reaction last Friday.
It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing how quick things turn around.
Yeah.
Because we're sitting here 120 minutes later, and the Flyers have allowed zero goals.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Like, for people who don't understand where I'm coming from with that, Friday after the game, I hopped on 97.3, did a post-game spot. Sounded like I didn't enjoy the game I just watched.
And did what I think is
a ton of coach speak, I guess, because I made it sound like do this, do that, this is what's got to be fixed, blah, blah, blah. And then I was just on the station again a few minutes ago within the last half hour. They came back at about 10 of 6. So, you know.
It's much easier to sound like a fan.
It's much easier to get away from the coach speak. No, but it's much easier to have better answers because,
absolutely.
Like, God, it was just so hard to do after game two when basically nothing went right. So what do you even say?
Right. At a certain point, you just have to burn the tape, right?
Yep.
I'm sure Alain Vigneault didn't. You know, we talked about them going over a lot of video in practice on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
But at this point, you burn the tape. It's gone. It's over. You've moved past it. You know, Carter Hart is very good.
Well, did you like – because you brought up the tape on Saturday morning kind of thing. Did you like the fact that while we probably were recording the last episode of YWT, that Carter Hart and the rest of the teammates were having contests to see who could hold their breath underwater the longest at the pool workout or something like that? Like, it was really funny.
Yeah.
That was really funny to hear that that's what they did on their day off the ice on Saturday.
You know what? You can't question it at this point.
No, you
right?
can't.
I mean,
you might look at that
and go, oh, really? That's what they're doing? They're not doing, you know, some hard dog sprints. But again, you can't fault it because they come out and they score a quick goal on Sunday.
Yep.
And just kind of lock it down after that.
Didn't it feel like a bit of a carbon copy to an extent? I mean, they scored it almost about the exact same time. I mean, it was what, a minute and 10 seconds later, I think?
Yeah.
And it wasn't much.
But the difference is after that, they kept the foot on the gas a little more.
Yeah.
And they didn't turtle on Sunday.
No, I don't think so.
But they weren't playing nearly as much with the puck as they were Tuesday. Today looked a lot more like the team that went undefeated in the round robin.
Yeah, probably the closest effort to this point. And I think it's the forechecking. I think that's what it is.
It was
winning board battles. That was the best they've looked at winning board battles against Montreal the entire series to this point.
This is what
they do. They work teams. And it was funny. After the game on Sunday, I was on 97.3 yesterday afternoon too. And I listened to them for the first half hour before I came on. And I – heard this. I heard what is the age old thing about when it comes to the 1-0 style game that it's boring, and I understand it's boring. But here's my thing about it, for anybody who has been with us the entire year, who has watched this team the entire season, and I know that sounds like an eternity ago because I mean we're coming up on when training camp started. You know, for this season.
Right.
Right.
Is Sam Moran going to be ready? Like, we're getting close to that point. It's.
Yeah, kind of. But so here's the thing about it is it's a boring brand of hockey that works. That's the thing. This is their brand of hockey. This is what they do. And for people who are looking for where's the 4-1, 5-1 games that they kept having, you know, they beat the Rangers a couple times like that. And they did that
in the round robin too.
But here's what it is. They play a 1-0 style game for two periods and wear the other team down. And then they score 3 goals in short order in the third period. And it looks like a lopsided win.
Right.
A lot of times how many times has that happened throughout
all
the year?
All season long.
Now it's not happening in this series. And there's two reasons for that. One, space is limited because it is the playoffs. And two, Carey Price is still very good. He hasn't had, I mean, the last two games, he hasn't played bad. Does he want the second goal back today? Absolutely, yeah. He does. But has he looked bad throughout? Not at all.
No,
but,
and at a certain point, you can't pin it on him when he allows one and two goals in back-to-back games after pitching a shutout in game two on Friday.
Right.
At a certain point, it's not him.
That's a weird shutout for him because it doesn't feel as much like his shutout because when it was 2-0 before he faced a shot.
Right.
Like, that's not his – he didn't keep it there.
Any goalie could have done what he did on Friday.
Carter Hart's two shutouts are more impressive because of the amount of time the game was at 1-0.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to tell you that I would add how long it was 0-0. But that was
they scored so quickly.
They scored five, six minutes into both games. So it was majority 1-0. One game it's entirely 1-0, and the other one it's 1-0 until the final 3 minutes of the second period.
Yep.
So he has to hold down that 1-0 lead, and the focus does go to him, especially the third period of game three.
Right.
Third period of game three, you're sitting on a 1-goal lead. It doesn't look like you're getting much of anything that's going to make it 2-0. Well, hold for the power play opportunities that you let get away in game three. But beside the point, you know, this will be a big time concern. It's still a concern, but it's still so much less of a concern when you've won a game. You win two games, you shut them out, and
winning solves everything.
Well, and here's the thing: it's still 3-0 or 3-1 in the series. It's still 3-1, and you can win. You have to win one game out of three, and you're moving on.
Yeah, and I just don't want them to look past the team at this point. I don't want them to look at this Canadian team and go, okay, well, we just shut them out twice back-to-back. We avenged the 5-0 game. I don't want them to chalk that game up as the slip, right? Because other than that, you're looking at 2-1, 1-0, 2-0.
Well, let's just go back.
If you look
go
at that
5-0
game and look at that as, oh, they were playing emotional because their coach left and blah, 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 and that's the slip. And now I don't want the Flyers to get comfortable. When you get caught.
But there's something to be said. Bill Meltzer tweeted something out a few moments ago that was great. Because he even said, go look at the number of goals allowed by the Flyers in – listen, I'll even throw the exhibition in for you. So 2-1-1-1, then 1 again in game 1, 5, and then
4
nothing
and
nothing.
Pulled. Right.
No, but 5 and then nothing and nothing. So which one – and his answer to that was, which one's the outlier then? It's the five because
it's not
that
the
was
one,
the rarity.
One, 1-0-0.
That was the one off, and every other game has been. I even threw the exhibition in there because all right, that was two.
Right, and Carter Hart has probably been the best Flyer.
He's had to be for a good chunk of it. But
we talked on Saturday's show. We talked about the fact that of the four goals he allowed in game two, at least two of them he had no chance on, and the other two, it's not unreasonable that he didn't make the save. So we're looking at a series where how many goals has Carter Hart allowed that were his fault? Between 0 and 1, depending on how you judge it.
Well, let's put it this way. The total number of goals he was in net for is 5. 1 in game 1 and 4 in game 2. And I don't really know if I found 1 in game 2 that he really should shoulder all the responsibility for.
No, definitely not.
And look at the 1 in game 1. Power play goal. Puck shot out of a scramble in front of the net. And Shea Weber was there. Yeah, wide open net. Gee, which one of the 5 is he stopping?
Right. Absolutely none of them. And
he
no
hasn't
goalie,
allowed a bad goal in the series.
And
yet.
No goalie in NHL history would have stopped those.
And I say that, and then...
Let's not, because
he hasn't allowed a bad goal in the series yet.
I will knock on my fake IKEA wood desk. Absolutely. Right. But either way, again, you just said it. Carter Hart has not allowed a goal that's his fault. Well, we are now 4 games deep in this series. Who starts tomorrow?
This is easy. It's Carter Hart.
It has to be, right?
Well, and for nothing else other than
– look at his workload.
And here's the thing. I said yesterday when I went on 97.3, my answer to that question at the time was the only way he doesn't is if he has to stand on his head and makes 33, 35 saves in the process, but they're high difficult. He made 29 today.
29. Okay.
But that being said, in making 29, I didn't see many dangerous ones. He made a few good ones,
credit to the defensive unit, by the way. Because they have been playing phenomenal hockey over the last two games after really an abysmal game two.
Well, and let's put it this way. I also gave that figure yesterday. Oh, if he makes 33, 35 saves and it's a heavy workload and he stands on his head. I was saying that
thinking. Maybe you go to Brian Elliott.
Well, no, but I'm saying that thinking a 3-1 game, a 4-2 game, they win, or, you know, even 4-3 a
4-3 in
game,
overtime.
You
know, right. Something like that.
Something yeah. like that where he gets beat at some point, but he still does the job and he has to hold them in it at the end.
But he's working and taking hits to his ego.
No, but,
and when's the last time Carter Hart took a hit to his ego? March?
Realistically, sure. I mean, I mean, it probably goes back further than that. I don't
know.
That's
what I'm saying.
But this is the thing. I said that thinking, well, you can't expect what happened today, but you have to assume that he's going to get scored on at some point. And if he has to hold
them. I don't know. Can you?
Well, yeah. But
the way he's playing, can you assume somebody's going to score on him?
My point in saying that is that you had to, like, he would have had to have held them in the game. And the push in the third period particularly, like if Montreal's coming at you in waves in the third period and it looks like the second period of game one.
Montreal would have had to tire him out.
Right. You really need to have him moving in all – I mean, for some of it, in the first period, did he even break a sweat?
In the game, did he break a sweat?
Well,
Montreal didn't pour it on until the second half of the third period.
I think the second had a few moments in the beginning, but okay. But not as much. And I definitely think the second half of the third period, there was a little bit of a push. But, I mean, they didn't even get Carey Price out of the net until the minute 25 left in the third period, down by two.
Yeah, that was a little on the slow side.
They were trying to kill off a penalty, too. So I understand that.
I'm in favor of the aggressive goalie pull. The thought crossed my mind when Montreal went on the power play with about 6 minutes to go. The thought crossed my mind because I'm personally in favor of that kind of thing. I'm in that kind of Patrick Waugh camp.
Kirk Muller has done some pretty radical things in running the bench, you know, in terms of trying some things. He's mixed up lines at times, which, you know, and I'm sure he's consulting with Claude Julien. I'm not saying that he's not like the Claude Julien doesn't have his finger on the pulse that he's home.
I'm sure somebody on the bench is wearing a headphone and talking to Claude Julien the whole game.
I don't know about that, but like, but they're talking to him in between for sure. So these line changes that they made going into this game didn't come from out of nowhere.
They weren't blind, right?
Kirk Muller said he talked to Claude Julien yesterday. So
I imagine he's talking to him.
Yeah, right. They're talking strategy, but nonetheless. So you don't, you know, I didn't know what kind of game Carter Hart was in for. Now that he's got this going right now, how do you not turn to him?
You can't.
Like, and for nothing else other than at this point in time, and I said this on my spot yesterday on 97.3, if you win another, like, at that point in time, you'd already won a game 2-1 and 1-0. If you win another 1-0, 2-1 style game, and 2-0 feels pretty close to that.
It certainly does.
You're crushing this team's will.
Yeah.
Montreal's will has to be a little bit deflated, doesn't it? Because now you've played really good. Like, honestly, has Montreal played a truly bad game in a series? I don't think so. But
no, not really.
But they still haven't won. You come out of that playing, thinking you're playing modestly well. You're not allowing tons of goals this team. So far, you've played this team in four games, and you're allowing a goal per game, and you've lost three games.
Montreal looks like a team that sold at the deadline. And the Flyers look like a team who added Derek Grant and Nate Thompson at the deadline. And by the way, how fantastic have those additions been?
Nate Thompson was one of the best players on the ice today, and I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's the truth. Because right. Nate Thompson, that
you gotta
line.
Break out that Nate Thompson graphic one of these days.
Not even for that, because he's not going to do that necessarily. I mean, he could sometimes. I'm not saying he can't, but that's not what he's expected to do. But to go in and put in the dirty work there, winning the battles in the corners. I mean, look at the plays toward the end, in middle of the third period. He's in the offensive zone, eating up valuable seconds that Montreal needs to try to get back into the game, and they can't get it away from him. And here's a guy who 2 weeks ago, people were thinking, you know, or less than 2 weeks ago,
aren't going to make the lineup.
How about after Friday? After Friday, everybody wanted him out of the lineup.
I called for it.
Right.
I called for it on this show.
And I did too, because I said something about that's who I would pull out, but I said I'd leave him in because I didn't think Travis Konecny was suiting up on Sunday when we actually recorded. I thought he was missing a game.
Right.
And interestingly enough, you know, Nick Aubé-Kubel was out of the lineup today, and I don't think that had anything to do with performance. He blocked a couple of hard shots in game three, and I think he's feeling them.
I think he was ready to take a day off, and you know what? If it was game six or game seven, I bet you he would have played.
I mean,
but that might have kept his legs fresh for maybe an appearance tomorrow. You know, well, maybe sure. just that one extra day and a fresh pair of legs.
Well,
in a game like this, right? You're looking at game five on the second sure. half of a back-to-back in a tight series.
And I generally would agree with you, except for the fact that, like, everybody got the case with the first lineup change. James Van Riemsdyk like came out. He was the lowest playing lowest ice time of any forward in game three. Here comes Joel Farabee. And Joel Farabee was out there a lot more than James Van Riemsdyk like was in game three. He played, I don't know exactly what his minute total is. I'll look it up really quick because I did just have the box score up. But it was much more significant. It had to be more than 10 minutes for Farabee because right. it felt like it. Yeah, 13:23. So he played a normal game workload for the line he was on.
He played a great game.
Yeah. So he was in expectedly.
Right.
Connor Bunneman was probably in unexpectedly.
That was probably the Nico Bakubel.
Right.
Asking for a day or whatever it was. Then deciding to sit him and let him play tomorrow or whatever it is.
Except for the fact that I really loved his game today.
He played well because
I think he plays to that style. He's a go to the grinding areas of the ice, win the battles. He's got size. When he scores in the minor leagues, he scores a ton of his goals by being at the front of the net. He's a rebound guy at the front of the net. Right. So he knows his style is big body, be physical, win the battles. He's not going to wow you with skill. He can do it on an occasion, but he's not going to wow you with that. He's going to work hard. And in this series, what have you needed more than guys who are willing to show the will to go into the dirty areas and to do those things?
Right.
And he was today. I certainly you see that he's going in the lineup. You go, I don't know how that's going to work out, but let's see. Obviously, he's in there for a reason. And then all of a sudden, he's having one of the best games I think there was out of many of the forwards.
Right. And you know what?
And he didn't. And you know what? Did he play a lot? No, because I just looked at his ice time. He played 9:48, so he didn't play a lot.
And that's all you want out of him.
But that was a very noticeable 9 minutes and 48 seconds.
It was a fantastic 9:48. Yeah, he played a great game, and I think we might see an extra scratch or two tomorrow. I think tomorrow we're gonna see who's feeling maybe not 100%, because you're looking at this lineup and you just have people itching to come back in. And if somebody wants to take a game off, this is a pretty good game to do it.
Right? Yeah, I hear you. And I do hear what you're saying.
But yeah, but the alternative there is that if you win, you just have 4 days off.
Well, exactly. And I see, this is the thing too. This hasn't been an easy series, obviously. Like no. This has been four really.
Even though it's 3-1, it's a close series.
Well, and take out game two.
Yeah. But
games 1, 3, and 4 that you've won have all been tight.
Yep.
And it's been that way throughout. In my mind, I want to go out there tomorrow and finish this thing off and be done with this team.
4-0, some big, right.
And I don't care how you win it. I just want to go out there and win it.
That's
so
fair.
So I'm done with this matchup.
Right.
And then this way I can turn my attention to somebody else. And granted, you know, what matchups are currently, you know, looking the Flyers in the face if they move on?
They look
like
the Islanders.
And the Islanders are going to be a kind of similar team. Now, the Islanders, the key difference with the Islanders is they have more skill players than Montreal does. Way more. Or at least more experienced skill players.
That's fair.
Because Barzal's not a rookie. And, you know, Barzal's not Nick Suzuki and Jesperi Kotkaniemi.
Right.
Like, they're young. They're not going to be perfect. And they're going to showcase the skill, but they're not going to do it on a consistent basis because they're rookies. It's, right. You know, Barzal's going to be the all-star that we know he is. And Anders Lee is an experienced vet. And Brock Nelson is an experienced vet. And those are going to be guys who know what they're doing in a playoff series. But
yeah, they don't scare me.
Well, no, but see, I do expect the Islanders to not play nearly the same exact style because there will be more open space because they have more speed.
Well, and also let's who would you rather have, Montreal's defense or the Islanders' defense?
I'd have to look at everybody on the Islanders' defense. Boychuk is good, but he's aging, and honestly, you don't know if he's going to be in the lineup all the time because he has been toying with injuries throughout the year. Pulak, I like. Pelech has been valuable for them. Other than that, I'm not really sure there's anybody else who truly stands. I mean, like Andy Green does not worry me.
Wait, do they have any player in their defensive core as good as Shea Weber?
Probably not as good as Shea Weber. But
how about
Jeff Petrie? You know, I think I could. Boychuk is good. You know who I think is really, and I forgot to mention him, but he's a rising guy. Devon Taves has been really good.
Devon Taves is good.
And Devon Taves gives me a bit of a Petrie vibe.
Okay, but I don't think he's there yet. Okay, now whose goaltending would you rather have, Montreal's or the Islanders?
Well, I'd rather have Montreal's because of the resume that Carey Price has. That being said, I think Varlamov has played very well throughout the year.
He has had a fantastic season.
And to the point, like that's the Islanders' style. I mean, the Islanders kill you with goaltending and defensive play,
right?
And don't mind if you're playing in a low scoring game. That's the same thing. But they've played in some high scoring games throughout the year.
Right.
They can get into it. They can get into a shootout too. You know, they can get into one of those offensive shootout style games where everybody's just scoring left and right.
Sure, but I'm just looking at this and I'm breaking it down. And defensively, I think Montreal is a better team than the Islanders. I think goaltending wise, obviously, we talked about Carey Price's resume versus Semyon Varlamov's current season. Barry Trotz gets a better result out of that team than Claude Julien seems to get in Montreal, as evidenced by the standings. But overall, I can't really say definitively that the Islanders are all that much better than Montreal.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting, and I don't want to look too far ahead. Obviously, we're not there yet. But
well, like we can have this conversation a little bit.
I'd rather break it down further this weekend when we know.
Fair. You're right.
But I do want to talk. Like, here's what I will say. You're looking at the potential of, like you said, that's probably the matchup that's awaiting you. But without trying to go too far ahead on it, but that's probably the matchup that's awaiting you because of the fact that that is a team that's up 3-0 in their series.
Right.
They need one more win, and Washington's got to go on that kind of run. And we all, and you know what I'm talking about, people out there listening. You know what I'm talking about. You know, if we're trying to have flashbacks to 2010 with this series that we're watching right now, which, by the way, was also a 3-1 after four games. And who won game five of that series? Just saying. But I'm looking for all the good vibes today, Kyle. I'm looking for all of them. We're having a good time.
The Flyers are up 3-1 and very likely, knock on wood.
Right.
Advancing.
And
you're allowed to be excited.
Well, and here's
the thing. Carter Hart looks spectacular.
And what
spectacular.
Look, we can try to downplay the hypotheticals because we don't want to get too far ahead. You can't change what's in front of you, which is a 3-1 series lead. This is the closest the Flyers have been to advancing in the playoffs
since 2012.
Since 2014 when they were in a game 7.
Oh, that was the Rangers, wasn't it?
Right, but that was the Rangers. But see, that thing with that series is, did you ever really feel like they were actually going to win that series at times? I mean, maybe on a rare occasion.
Until Jason Atkinson took that double minor high stick.
And that was, that was way back in game 1.
Was that in game 1?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a close – they scored first. The Flyers had a 1-0 lead, and it was 1-1 third period, and that's when the whole game turned upside down.
That double minor was awful. Awful.
The only way I'll say I believe that they may have had a shot was because the game 6 before that, I think Wayne Simmons had a hat trick.
Yeah.
And it was maybe they have just turned – I mean, the problem that I always –
they might be able to put one together here. Game 7, anything can happen.
The problem that I have with that – like looking at that series like that is that we all knew where they had to go to play game 7. And we knew that they had a history of not playing as well in that particular building.
No.
And it just, that was what felt like the long shot more than anything. By the way, ironically enough, when's the last time the Flyers had 3 wins in a single playoff series, which was 2014, the coach on the other bench.
Was it Alain Vigneault?
Oh
man. Oh, it's good to have a.
But it is. Right, but in truth, like, you had the right answer the first time. This is as close as they've been to actually winning a playoff series since 2012.
Right.
You know, it's been 8 years. We've been sitting here waiting for 8 years. I even said that probably even in 2014, because I knew this was the case in 18 and 16. Probably even in 14.
When was
the last time they were the favorite in a series?
Let's wind it back even further. When's the last time you thought the Flyers were this good? Was it in 2010? Because I certainly didn't think that team was this good. That team was bad. Go look at that roster.
Right.
Oof.
Now, do you know, I think the answer is still 2012, because in 2012, and granted, here's something interesting about it. They came in as the lower seed on Pittsburgh in that series, because games 1 and 2 were in Pittsburgh. But the way that they got out of that series at that moment, not to mention they also had flashes throughout the year where they were really good at times. I mean, that was, the Drew Yager Hartnell line was excellent.
Oh, that line was fun.
And then you had
2012.
And then you had rookie Sean Couturier, Danny Briere. You know, like there was enough talent. And defensively, even without Chris Pronger, you had Kimmo Tiimonen. You had a whole, you know, a slew of other guys that were still there too from that. I think Matt Carl was still there.
Poor Braden Coburn.
Braden Coburn. Yeah, I mean, I know. It's different
on the top
now.
Pair. Like a lot. He spent a lot of that season on the top pair.
Yeah.
And also, who was your goalie? Oh, wait, he's hurt. Who's your backup goalie? Oh, wait, he's hurt. Who's your third goal?
I mean, yeah, that
it,
was.
It felt like they were still goalies last season. Weren't, it was
they
bad.
Were still. No, it wasn't. That was that year was Brizgalov and Bobrovsky. But oh. The year before that.
Future
though,
Vezina winner.
The year before that, they were still really going Brizgalov. To. They were still. The year before that, they were still going to the well with Michael Layton at times.
Michael Layton, former record holder for NHL saves in a game, I believe. Before Alex Lyon passed him.
No, he still has it.
Oh, he still has it.
He had not. Alex Lyon,
oh, Lyon didn't pass him. Okay,
yeah, and Layton had 98. Ridiculous. I know.
Insane. How many did Korpisalo have in game one?
Oh, goodness.
I think it was like 84.
They finished with 90 shots, I think. So it was 87.
87, something like that. I think was it the former record 84. Did Kelly Rudy have 84?
I don't remember exactly when they said he passed. Either way. It was close. It was like 82, something like that.
But either way, Flyers are up 3-1 tomorrow night. So we think Carter Hart's going to be in. Do you foresee any lineup changes, or if it ain't broke, don't fix it?
I don't know. It's really tough. Oh, so hold on a minute.
Because AV did tinker between game 3 and game 4, even though it, quote, wasn't broke.
Yeah, let me see some, because I didn't really get a whole because I'm getting some stuff from Flyers PR right now as we speak. And let me see here, because I wanted to read something, because I'm trying to see if there's anything in here, because it sounds like Alain Vigneault basically said Carter Hart's going to be in net tomorrow night. But
he
I
did.
Don't, well, he didn't say – he alluded to it, I think. He's saying, like, Carter's a huge part of this. We're not playing perfect hockey. Without a doubt, when we do make mistakes, he's been able to get that big save for us.
And you know what? Brian
that
Elliott –
sounds
– Brian Elliott's – a mature enough backup that we're not going to hear a peep out of him.
Right. I mean,
he knows he probably wants the ring more than anybody on the team. Right.
Sure. Well, so here's where I'm trying to go with this. So here's the, this is pretty incredible. So, per NHL stats and information, Carter Hart is the second youngest goalie in NHL history to record back-to-back shutouts in the playoffs, and just the fourth different goaltender and fifth occasion to do so under the age of 23.
Peters was one of them, right?
No, because we're not talking Flyer goalies. We're talking goalies. So it was mentioned the last time this happened was 1994. You know what was funny? Right at the top of the show, right before we actually really started, we mentioned the Steve Dangle intro, right?
We did.
Steve Dangle makes a reference to this goalie in that intro.
Oh, is it Felix Potvin? Or
it's
was it
Felix
Ron
Potvin. No, it's Felix Potvin. Potvin did it.
Felix Potvin.
Later on at age 22. He was rapidly closing in on his 23rd birthday by that point. Two times. Wow, and this is really impressive. Now, and granted, legendary goalie from a completely different era. Terry Sawchuk did it twice in his at 22, separated by maybe about 20 days.
Hey, so
I'm not kidding.
Asking for a friend, has a goalie ever done it 3 times in a row?
I will look into that in a minute.
How about three times in four days?
By the way, so Carter Hart at 22 years old and 5 days is the second youngest, the youngest, which he was never going to come close to, unfortunately.
Was this Matt Murray?
No. No, because this happened – the only younger one than this happened in the 1944-45 season.
Oh.
So, yeah, Detroit Red Wings, Harry Lumley did it at 18 – everybody remembers
Harry
that.
Lumley.
At 18,
everyone
at 18
remembers
years old.
Harry Lumley.
But my point being in saying that, this doesn't happen a lot for a goalie who's this young.
I wonder if he did it at 18 because they didn't wear masks and goalies retired at, 22.
Okay, hang on a minute. So let's go back to the other thing about Flyer goalies for a minute.
Okay.
It's only the third time this has happened, back-to-back playoff shutouts in Flyers history. The other two are Bernie Parent in the 1975.
One from Bernie and one from Ron Hextall?
No. So Bernie Parent in the 1975 quarterfinals against Toronto, games 2 and 3. Okay. And the other one also came against the Montreal Canadiens.
Ooh.
And it was Michael Layton in 2010, games one and two.
How does Michael Layton have every weird goaltending stat ever?
I know. It sounds ridiculous.
We did not know that when we started this conversation.
No, do you know what? I know we've been trying to downplay, but we like sat there and said, oh, you know what? Like, Carter Hart's got the back-to-back shutouts, but the team played really well in front of him, like with the defensive side of things. Here's a great one for you. The Flyers are the first team to lead a 7-game series after 4 games while only scoring 5 goals. So I guess when you're not getting help and your goaltender has got back-to-back shutouts and you've only scored 5 goals, you got 3-1 series lead and you haven't scored more than 5 goals. That's incredible. It says in 2018, Vegas swept the LA Kings, scoring only 7 goals.
Oh, that series was crazy. Okay, so speaking of these goals, I do actually want to talk about the goals that were scored today.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Because Michael Roffel, my goodness. Did you know he had that shot in his arsenal?
You know what? I don't know that he's had that shot. He did pick the corner. And it's one of the only ways that you beat Carey. And that's one of the only ways you beat Carey Price.
Although on that angle that I saw, it sure looked like a lot of that far side was open. He picked the corner, but I don't know if he necessarily had to.
You don't know that, though, because here's the thing.
It's Carey Price.
Carey Price gives you the space, makes you think it's there, and then takes it away.
I have never seen a puck hit the corner that perfectly. It looked like... You know the Dell screensaver where it bounces corner
and pops right back.
It hit the corner.
Down. Yeah.
The last time I can remember
a shot like that, or at least from my recollection, I'm sure it's happened other times too in the season for the Flyers. But Phil Myers had one against Toronto in the year that was like that went in, out that quickly.
Yeah, that was one of those ones that rattled around. You weren't sure it was.
Right, you didn't even know it was in there, and it was out that quickly. It sounded like it hit the post.
And speaking of Phil Myers.
Yeah, well, you know what? Phil Myers had a goal. This is really interesting. He had a goal against Carey Price in November. That was like this. He just turned around and threw it at the net. It went in. And it didn't go in that one went in much more cleanly than this one did. This looks like it's going wide.
This was directly Carey Price.
I mean, this was going wide, and he puts his arm out and knocks it in.
Stuck his arm out there. It hits the inside of the pad. Boop. Right
and then right
the hole.
Yep. And I will tell you right now, it caught me off guard.
Me too. I caught Jim Jackson off guard.
I saw it going to the net, and I'm like, that looked harmless. Whoa. Holy crap. What a leaky goal that was. You know, there it was. And I, like, even as I was starting to type out all the stuff on socials, you know, mine at Flyerdelphia during the game, like I am.
It's behind you on the board.
Yeah, it's behind me. And there's something else behind me.
At Kevin_Dirt, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. But so I'm going over there. And, like, I actually said to myself out loud as I'm going, like, there it was. That's the one that when you just throw it on net enough times, one can beat him like that. You can get one of those lucky breaks, and there it was. Phil Myers takes that shot.
Nobody's perfect, not even Carey Price.
Right. Well, you know, and then we look at the other guy, you know. How's the other goaltender do? Like I said, he's out-dueling Carey Price. He's actually out-dueling Carey Price.
We talked before this series began. We did a little bit of playing up of the student versus mentor thing. And boy... Students looking good.
So the funny thing about that to me is we played it up and then we wanted to downplay it because we said, oh, that's not the series though. The series is not Carter Hart against – well, and this was the thing. This is what they all told us. It's not Carter Hart against Carey Price. It's the Flyers against the Canadians, and they wanted it to be that way.
But what
has it really turned out to be?
It really has been Carey Price versus Carter Hart.
Well, and here's the thing. I will say it to the sense of – Carey Price has not stolen the one game that Montreal has won in the series. Like we said earlier.
No, he didn't need it.
He wasn't solely responsible for that win.
Michael Layton could have gotten that win.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't have been a shutout win, but I think he would have gotten
it. Michael Layton in the playoffs. It might have been a shutout win.
Well, if it was, at that point in 2010, sure. At that point in 2010, sure. But, Carter Hart has played as well as advertised. And, you know what? I just like something that I had just thought of as we were talking about it here and things like that. Remember that narrative that went on in the regular season
about him?
The fact that he just played what counts as 2 road games and has 2 shutouts.
everything along those lines has a giant asterisk on it. That's not
true.
Not a particularly fair statement.
But no, it's not a fair statement. What I'm trying to get at with that is that it's not the color of the jersey, okay? It's not because the Montreal Canadiens were wearing red and the Flyers were wearing white that he didn't look as good as normal, you know?
No, and we have heard a little bit about the goalies love these sight lines, not having fans.
Yeah, no,
a lot of the goalies have talked about it being a huge boon to the defensive game and the goalie-winning game.
And that's where Carter Hart looks like Carey Price so much in this series is if it's clean, if he can see it, he's probably stopping it.
I don't care how good the numbers get in Canada. We just need to make sure we keep fans out forever here. Like, I don't care how good the numbers get. Edmonton, don't consider letting fans in for the Eastern Conference Finals. Don't do it.
Well, and you know what?
Keep Carter Hart nice and happy.
I mean, you know what? Well, here's the thing. They will.
I know. I'm joking.
But
they're locked in there.
There's going to be a part to Carter Hart that would want it later on. You know, like this is what has to be done now. But give me the playoff crowd. You know, I think he wants that. He lived for that. You know, I mean, this is a guy who played in World Junior gold medal games for Canada,
and even bigger than that, crazy played in outdoor games for Team Canada.
Right.
With massive with
crazy crowd. And yeah.
Carter Hart's got plenty of pressure under the bright lights.
For sure he does. Absolutely he does.
And after watching him for three games, because I'm going to give him an absolute mulligan on game two between how he played nothing around them and blah, 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 he gets a pass for game two. The rest of the team?
Sure he does.
Not so much. Well, Carter Hart gets a pass for game two. And as far as I'm concerned, he's played three phenomenal hockey games. He's allowed a total of one goal.
Yeah,
it's hard to lose playoff games when you allow one goal over the course of three games.
Well, I think that, like, I went and looked this up the other day. Goals against average of in terms of goalies who actually have started more than two games in the playoffs so far.
He's still there.
He's 1-2 with Carey Price. Like, even he's either 2 to Carey Price, or he's going to be – by now, he might be number one.
He'll probably be one now because Price let in two.
I mean, I'm sure the save percentage is getting up there too. I mean, the only guy who had let's put it this way, skewed number. The only guy who had a higher save percentage than Carey Price or Carter Hart in the playoffs with more than two starts was Korpisalo, because you saw a shot volume that was ridiculous.
Right.
So
the team is bad and he's
because you because you played, like, at that point in time, Korpisalo would have played what, I guess, seven games last night, might have been two nights ago might have been the eighth.
Right.
Or whatever. But to that point, you had played seven games that were realistically 8.5 games.
Right.
Insane. You know, like because you add five periods to, you know, or 4.5 overtimes to it, then, you know.
Absolutely.
Your numbers get skewed a little bit, and you make 80-something saves on 90 shots. That's like, that's absurd.
Right. All right here. I think that'll just about do it for our conversation here. Give me a prediction for tomorrow.
Ooh. Predictions.
Yeah, I mean,
you know I love them.
You know what? I think Montreal pushes, and I think the Flyers respond in kind. I think this game is 4-3 in overtime.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm going to get a little bit of high scoring in here.
I saw something today, and I'm going to refer to it when I preview the game tomorrow. Carey Price's numbers this year, when he starts both ends of back-to-backs.
Oh, they're bad, aren't they?
His numbers in the second game are not good. This and let's do this way. That's not a question either. He's starting too, because your playoff life is on the line.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to him every single game.
We didn't even bring it up because it's that. Yeah,
right. Well, because obviously, he's going to play. And if he's going to play, my thing is get the shot volume. If you can get the shot volume, get some rebounds around him. Maybe, you know, I don't know who it was. I think it was mentioned on the broadcast at one point in time. Does Montreal have the depth outside of what's in the lineup to then be able to throw somebody in who can do the work that, say, a Connor Bunneman did today?
Nope.
Probably not. Especially
and that's what I meant. That's what I meant when I said earlier that you might see some guys take a day that might not necessarily take a day, because the Flyers have that option.
Who's the number one – or not number one. Who's the number seven defenseman for Montreal?
He's a lot worse than Shane Gostisbehere.
And please don't tell me, like, because the name is coming to mind for me because I look at their list of stretches.
Is it Jordy Ben?
That's not a bad one. I didn't. No, Jordy Ben's
not in the lineup. No, he's gone, isn't he?
No, he's not. He's gone.
He's gone. They sold him at the deadline because they were sellers.
I mean, it might be Cale Flurry, but it also, you know, I mean, Christian Follin's sitting there.
It's not anybody good. Long story short, it's somebody who was getting scratched in Lehigh Valley.
Right. And I mean, like, do I think that they can make an improvement up front? Like, if you put Ryan Poehling in tomorrow, then I think you're making an improvement to the Montreal lineup.
You're probably going to see him.
But I do think you're making an improvement. And I would take somebody like for them, I'd take somebody like Jake Evans out or Belzile.
Somebody on that fourth line.
And Poehling's got some of that offensive ability. He actually brings something to the lineup that I go, yeah, I'd watch him because he's got talent. He's got potential and he can do something in this series, especially if they have, you know. The turnovers today were a lot fewer and farther between. There wasn't exactly a Scott Laughton or two Scott Laughtons.
Scott Laughton had like a poor game, by the way. He had a couple.
You know what I think about in game, at least in game four for Scott Laughton? I think he had a more invisible game.
That's fair.
Which was disappointing.
Yeah, I'd like to see him bounce back tomorrow.
That whole line didn't, you know, it was an interesting combination. It did not do a whole hell of a lot for me.
Right.
The Giroux Grant Laughton line, that didn't do a whole hell of a lot for me.
No, but I did like seeing AV mix it up. And I liked the
Konechny, Hayes, and Farabee line. Thought that looked good.
Yeah, that was great.
I liked obviously the fourth line, or was it the fourth line, really? I mean, like at times it didn't feel like it.
No.
I thought Couturier and Rafa looked good together.
They did.
Couturier set him up.
That goal. Yeah.
So that helped. So I thought that they looked good. I just don't know what to do about that other grouping, you know, at all. Like that felt like the outlier of the group, because at least the other three lines had something going. I thought that the second one had some moments. Couturier's line obviously had some moments. They scored a goal, and the fourth line carried you through the dirty work of it. You know, they did a lot of that hard work, and Drew had chances. You know, like he definitely passed up on one shot on a power play.
Yeah, he sure did.
Just saying, you got to take him.
He's done that consistently since they've been in the bubble, and I'm not a fan of it.
Well, and did you hear what Bill Clement said after that too? That he looks like he doesn't have the confidence in his shot, which we don't understand why, because he's got it. We know he
got
does.
It. We know
but
he
why,
does.
Why? But boy, he must not have confidence in it, because why is he passing it up? He wants to pass every single time he has it.
Yep.
And that's a scary thought. But
like you said, we're looking at line combinations. And if you have an idea what you think the Flyers should do with their line combinations, you can send us those combos on Twitter at YWTPodcast. It's all on the board behind Kevin. He's at Kevin_Durso, at Flyerdelphia during games, at Sports Talk PHL. You can find his articles and the show at SportsTalkPhilly.com. And before we get out of here, I did want to mention that other hashtag you got up there.
Yeah. That came out right at warmups too. So like I was looking in it, cause right at warmups, I don't know this for a fact. I assume Gord Miller had the call on NBCSN.
And in case any of our listeners missed the news and haven't heard yet, Dale Hawerchuk passed away at the age of 57 from cancer today.
Yeah.
And we just wanted to take a moment and send our condolences out to his friends and family and to the entire Winnipeg Jets organization and every other organization he played for, honestly.
Yeah. So it came out right around warmups, and I think Gord Miller was tweeting out stuff about the lineups. So that we got right away warmup start. He must've been calling the game today on NBCSN. And that's when the JVR is not out there. Farabee is. Okay.
Yeah, and that was a big,
and that was, too. And that was like, and we're focusing on that. We're going, oh, look, we got big lineup news in this game. And then next thing I know, there was the tweet from his son, Eric, who has been leading the brigade of updates on Dale Hawerchuk throughout this process. And there it was. And it was, everybody else pretty much chimed in right away after it. But this is a guy who, I mean, If your earliest memories of this team, and I think Kyle, you and I are in the same boat in terms of the earliest memories we have of the Flyers,
you get a little bit of Dale Hawerchuk.
No, but then you're thinking of that '97 team, and Dale Hawerchuk's on it. You know,
yep, for sure.
And there you go. So that's
Motley Crue.
You know, and that was the tail end of a Hall of Fame career that was well deserved.
Absolute Hall of Fame career.
He had 518 career goals. He had 1,400 points. He was definitely a high end player. Offensively,
he goes down as an absolute legend.
Probably the superstar player for the original Winnipeg Jets.
For sure.
That turned into the Phoenix Coyotes. Still a solid, successful career in Buffalo too, and then, you know, the last stop in Philadelphia for a little while.
Very possibly a top 10 winger of all time.
It could be. I mean, he had some really good, you know,
definitely in the conversation.
And there were times where I don't remember if it was pre or post, but there were times when if the Legion of Doom wasn't working sometimes, or if they separated them for any reason, or someone was out of the lineup, you've got Dale Hawerchuk on the line with John LeClair and Eric Lindros.
Yeah.
And it worked obviously because Dale Hawerchuk was such a good player. So
yeah, he sure was.
It was sad news though, because I think it couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 weeks ago, if that, that the update was out that his cancer was back and he was going through more of a battle, and everybody was trying to tell, you know, say pull through. And I think I wrote it down on the board because not only is he a former Flyer, but I think it's fitting in this time when we've all sat here and for the entire year have been Oscar Strong, and, you know,
cancer sucks, man.
I know, by the way, something that we didn't really get the chance to get into when we recorded on Saturday, that he gets back on the ice and there's that source of inspiration that the Flyers get, you know.
That was amazing. We've been saying
that all year, and here's a Hall of Fame player who obviously has gone way too soon now. That's just, you know, he should be doing something else. And I think he had coached for a time and he had a career in front offices or something like that. Like, he definitely was always around. He can probably sit there and say lifetime member of some form of the game of hockey.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he always had some involvement in some way. I think he was involved in scouting for Winnipeg or something like that. But something else that makes sense now is Winnipeg had a couple press conferences and their GM got very emotional talking about him. And I think maybe now there's more context to that, because I guess even then they knew he probably wasn't doing so well.
Yeah.
And it's just a shame that it happened this soon, that we heard about it from that update that it was back to, you know, he's gone now. So
yeah, it's
a sour way to end this show, cause we've been having fun with it. Obviously, like, it's great. The Flyers are up 3-1 in a series.
But you know what? Dale Hawerchuk deserves it.
And it was really nice, the end of our
show is quote unquote ruined, and it's not ruining it at all.
No, I don't think it's ruining it either. You know what? It was really cool that they had a quick turnaround on 30 minutes before the game starts. We're finding that news out and they've got it.
They got a graphic. They got a moment of silence.
To get that in there. That
the
was
NHL
awesome.
Came
Good
through
touch.
First game of the day and they got, the
I don't know.
They got it.
I don't know that there's anything that's gone on in the last month or so that the NHL hasn't come through with. They've done a great job with this.
Well, so, we're going to hope that the Philadelphia Flyers do a great job with game 5 tomorrow night at 8 p.m.
So hopefully next time we're back on here, whenever that may be, it'll be Sunday in our regular time slot, yep. But hopefully we're talking about a preview of the next series,
yep.
And we're trying to figure out who they're playing and that there's not too many games. I mean, the good news about what you were talking about with the Islanders too, and the fact that that looks like who they might play, isn't it nice that, like, if Washington is eliminated at some point here, then at worst, Tampa Bay and Boston have to go against each other.
That would be nice.
And that's going to be a beatdown of a series. You know it is.
Oh, and we got to cut this off here somewhere. We can't start talking about other series.
No, we're not talking about other series today.
We want to break down the Flyers game. If you want to hear us talk about other series, you'll have to download Sunday's episode. That'll be the new one. We're getting out of here. Goodbye, everybody.